And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Amateur Traveler, Episode 128. Today the Amateur Traveler goes to Micronesia. You might not be able to find this island paradise on the map, but you'll learn about swimming with jellyfish, World War II history, and other surprises today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before I get into the interview today, I have two news stories for you. The first one sounds like it's coming right out of the movies. A man has just been arrested for living in one of London's airports for 3 years. In a scene right out of the movie The Terminal, a man has been living in one of the London airports. Unlike the movie, this story does not yet have a happy ending. A homeless chef was locked up for 3 years after making the Gatwick Airport his home. Anthony Delaney ate, showered, and slept at the busy airport, brushing off security staff who stopped him more than 30 times. He told his lawyers he was happier staying there because he was clean, dry, and warm. There was no mention made of whether he might be carrying the ashes of his dead father in a coffee can. The second news story may have been an odd day for some visitors to London. There they were in Trafalgar Square, being tourists, and suddenly the crowd around them froze and stayed frozen for 5 minutes. If you haven't heard of the group Improv Everywhere, scenes like this are happening around the globe. You can check out the video for that story as well as the details for the story before at tripinator.com. And I've also included a link to the Improv Everywhere site to see what other strange shenanigans are going on, possibly near you. Before we started this week's interview, I did want to tell you there will be a little more background noise in this particular show because our interviewee was in an internet cafe on the other side of the world, and we'll get into more details where he is and why as the show progresses. I'd like to welcome to the show Gary, who's come to talk to us about Micronesia. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Gary, why don't you tell us a little bit? You're on a trip right now.
Yeah, I've been traveling since March of 2007. And my route is kind of a little bit different. I started going through the Pacific. So I started in Hawaii, Tahiti, Easter Island, most of the Southern Pacific, and then kind of worked my way up to the North Pacific and Asia, and now I'm in Australia.
And if you notice a lot of background noise, Gary is sitting in a cyber cafe in Melbourne, Australia. If you're interested in more details about his trip, where can they find out information about that?
Everything-everywhere.com.
Okay. I think you're probably going to have to tell a lot of people where Micronesia is. They probably didn't have a sixth grade teacher like I did who lived in Micronesia for years and filled our heads with stories about Micronesia. Where are we talking about, first of all?
It's in the North Pacific, and by that I mean it's just north of the equator. It is an area which has strong ties to the United States. There are really three definitions of Micronesia. One is there is a country called Micronesia, the Federated States of Micronesia.
Right.
There is the kind of political grouping, which after World War II was known as the Trust Territory of the Pacific. And that is what is used in kind of working language as Micronesia today. That consists of the Marshall Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, Guam, the Northern Marianas Islands, and Palau. And in a broader geographical sense, it's those five areas plus Kiribati and Nauru. But Kiribati and Nauru were a former British colony, so they're not really as tied in with the other places.
Okay. And I'm going to guess you didn't go to every island in Micronesia, because we're talking about how many different islands in that total area?
If you go to every inhabited island, I think it's well over 600.
Okay.
The Marshalls is a chain of coral atolls. Within the Federated States of Micronesia, you have four different states, all of which, except one, consist of a chain of islands. So, yeah, it's a lot of islands.
So what led you to that very out-of-the-way place in the world?
Well, if you've ever read like an almanac or a list of countries, you always see there's China, Japan, you know, France. And those are the places everyone goes to. But then there's always these little countries that no one's ever heard of. Uh-huh. And I've always been fascinated by these little countries like Liechtenstein and Monaco. And the motherlode of these little countries is in the Pacific. So you got places like Samoa and Tuvalu and the Solomon Islands. And so I really wanted to start it in this area because it's a place that nobody ever goes. It's a place we don't know a lot about. It's just kind of more exotic.
And how long were you in that general area, first of all?
I spent about 6 months in the Pacific total, and that includes both the South Pacific and Micronesia. I was in Micronesia, that general area, for about 3 weeks.
Okay. And what was the highlight?
Probably it would either have to be the Jellyfish Lake in Palau or the ruins of Nan Modal in the island of Panape.
You already told me about the Jellyfish Lake. In fact, if people go to tripinator.com, I've already got a link up to your video that you showed me. But tell people a little bit about that experience. That was just fascinating to watch.
It's the only place you can really do it in the world. Most places where there are jellyfish, you want to avoid them because they'll sting you or they could kill you.
Sure.
Here in Australia, that's, you know,
the box jellyfish,
you want to avoid them. In Palau, in the state of Koror, which is the largest state in Palau, it consists of a lot of little limestone islands. And in, I think, five of these islands, there's a lake that developed inside the island with seawater. And it's fed by the ocean. There are small cracks in the limestone. And when this developed, jellyfish got stuck in there. And over time, they evolved. They have no predators, so they have no stingers. So you can go swimming with the jellyfish. There's a couple small fish in the lake. For the most part, they spend all day just going back and forth across the lake, following the sun. You go snorkeling. There's no scuba involved. They're very close to the surface. It's very accessible. If you don't like diving, not a problem. Even if you can't swim well, you can go with a life preserver and swim with the jellyfish. Swimming with the jellyfish in Palau is like nothing you can do on Earth. It's a very surreal experience to have these creatures touch you because there's nothing else really like it. It's this amorphous blob when it comes up and it touches you, and it's a very soft, it doesn't hurt at all, but the first time it happens, it's kind of discomforting until you get used to it.
I would think you'd have sort of a natural tendency, if you've been in water with jellyfish before, to try and avoid these.
I think a lot of people do, but I'm from the Midwest, so I didn't know any better. So okay. I had no problem swimming with them.
Okay.
They're about the size of your fist, the largest ones, maybe a little bit bigger, and the smallest ones are maybe the size of your thumb, tip of your thumb.
And I know most of you don't usually go to the website after you watch a particular episode and look at a video, but you have to go see this one. It's just really fascinating to watch. Just a very beautiful experience.
I shot that with a rental camera, just a cheap point and shoot that was in a waterproof case.
Uh-huh.
I got it for the day because we were going diving. And the Jellyfish Lake is what we did during our surface time. While we were waiting, you have to wait like, you know, an hour or two, depending on how deep you dive.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did is we went to the Jellyfish Lake, had lunch, and I had this cheapo camera. And I also have a lot of camera equipment I carry with me. So I had a 2 gigabyte compact flash card. I put it in and just shot video instead of still photos with it. And that was it.
Your two highlights were the Jellyfish Lake and then what was the other one? I've forgotten, I'm afraid.
Nan Modal is a ruins on the island of Panape in the Federated States of Micronesia, and it's for the most part relatively unknown. I had never heard of it before I had visited, but it probably deserves to be on a list of some of the great ruins of the world. I've heard it described as a cross between Venice and Machu Picchu. It is created with these very large basalt logs. The structures are built as if you were creating a log cabin, and all around the structures, some of which have walls that go up maybe 20 feet high, are these canals. And all of the islands with the buildings on it are connected with wooden bridges. And for the most part, the ruins have been left alone. On the other hand, there's actually been nothing done as far as restoration. As far as I know, there's no park there. Nothing is being done by the government to protect it. And I think it actually might be on private land because I had to pay $2 to some family that was taking a nap to go walk around. But it's really an amazing thing. And we had to go there by sea. We had to take a boat, go through the lagoon to actually wind up at Nan Modal. And we entered through the sea, and there's kind of a little ancient harbor that's there.
Interesting. Talked about waking up the families taking a nap. So you're out of the way. How much tourism is there on Panape, for instance?
With the exception of Guam, which gets a lot, and Saipan in the Northern Marianas Islands, they get very little tourism. Nowhere in Micronesia, I would say, there's anything resembling like a high-end resort. Okay. In the state of Chuuk, that's one of the very famous diving site, Truk Lagoon, also known as Chuuk Lagoon.
Okay.
That's where a large part of a Japanese fleet was sunk during World War II.
Recall it.
That's a very famous dive site. I don't know, maybe the biggest hotel there might have, say, 30 rooms, not very high end.
Interesting.
On Pohnpei, I think Pohnpei is probably the most beautiful island I've seen in the Pacific. I think it's on a par with Bora Bora. But the problem is the only way you can get to Pohnpei is there's a flight that goes one day from Honolulu to Guam and the next day from Guam to Honolulu. So on either end, you have a tourist destination. On Guam, that's where all the Japanese go, and Hawaii is where most Americans stop their trip. So no one ever bothers to make the trip in between.
Huh.
And Palau is even harder to get to because most flights come from Guam. There's, I think, one a week or twice a week that comes from Australia, a few from Manila. But it's also just in a very awkward spot and very difficult to get to, even though there's some of the best diving in the world there.
Now, you mentioned Palau. Palau was the site of horrendous fighting in World War II. How much does that shape the experience of going there now? Can you tell at all? Is it just pretty much forgotten at this point?
In Palau, I saw very little in the way of World War II historical sites.
Uh-huh.
On Saipan, however, there was a great deal dedicated to it, as well as on Guam.
Okay.
The Battle of Saipan was something I knew very little about until I had gone there. One of the things I didn't know is that Saipan was actually populated by Japanese civilians prior to the start of the war.
Right.
So when the Americans invaded Saipan, it was really the first Japanese territory that they invaded that had Japanese civilians. And what happened during the Battle of Saipan is that as the Marines took the island, the civilians were pushed to the north end of the island where there was a very large cliff. And the Japanese had been told that, well, the Americans, they will rape you, they will kill you, they will murder your children, this war propaganda. And what happened is the women began jumping off the cliff. And several hundred Japanese killed their children, and they jumped off the cliff to avoid being captured by the Americans.
Right.
This was all filmed.
But yeah, I've seen
and
it. Yeah.
The other thing I didn't know is that the island of Tinan, which is just south of Saipan, that was the launching point for the Enola Gay, which dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. And when you see that footage from Saipan, you kind of at least have an appreciation for what they were thinking when they made the decision, I think, to drop the atomic bomb.
Right.
When they saw that someone could look at this video and say, wow, if people are going to react like that, what's going to happen when we attack the Japanese mainland?
Mm-hmm.
Or also, you know, during the Battle of Okinawa.
Right.
It was actually really interesting because I started my trip in Hawaii. I got to see Pearl Harbor. And I also kind of worked my way through the Pacific. I was in New Caledonia, Vanuatu, Guadalcanal.
Huh.
I did get to go to places like Palau, Tarawa. And then finally I did end up in Hiroshima. And it was kind of, you got a sense of the flow of the war in the Pacific.
Interesting. What do you wish you had known before you went? I think you said you didn't do a lot of planning ahead of time. So the whole question's about asking you which guidebook, you said, forget those.
Well, to be honest, I don't know what a guidebook's going to tell you for Micronesia.
Right, sure.
When I was in the Marshall Islands, I looked online and I found a hostel. And it turns out that and maybe one other hotel are the only places you can stay in the city of Majuro, which is the capital of the Marshall Islands.
Uh-huh.
There's not much there. There's nothing to do. It's a really different kind of country in a lot of ways. When you go to Micronesia, if you go to Pohnpei, you're going to learn about non-modal because that's really kind of the attraction. Other than that, it's a lot of diving.
Okay.
Saipan, the thing that surprised me was the amount of sex tourism that you see.
Oh, really?
You walk down the streets of downtown Garapan, and I would, without exaggerating, I would say 40% of the businesses in the downtown area are massage parlors.
Huh.
And I was propositioned probably 5 times in the first 15 minutes I was there. That had never happened to me before in my life. You know, I grew up in the Midwest. It's not something you're accustomed to, but it was
not so
just
much.
Overwhelming. How much of that, even though the Northern Marianas Islands are American territory, it really had the feel almost for being an Asian country because there were so many Chinese women that moved to Saipan to work in the garment factories in the 1980s that it just has a very strong Chinese feel to it.
Interesting. What was the biggest surprise? So that sounds like one of them, at least.
Learning about the Marshall Islands, I thought was fascinating, why this country came into being. When I learned about the history of the trust territory of the Pacific, I got to talk to people in Pohnpei and Kosarai and in Majuro. The country of the Marshall Islands exists to maximize the amount of aid they can get from the United States. I mean, I wish I could put it nicer, but that's the truth. That's why it exists. the United States, as you know, did nuclear testing in the Pacific after World War II. And they detonated nuclear weapons on Bikini Atoll and other atolls in the Marshall Islands. And the United States has been paying reparations to people who lived on Bikini. And I think there were 200 some original people on the island that were resettled. That 200 has grown to about 3,500 in a couple decades through marriage and children and other reasons they don't know. So you have a large part of the population of the Marshalls, which is dependent upon USAID. They can now move back to Bikini, but no one really wants to because they've got accustomed to life in Majuro. Well, one thing I didn't point out is that all those places I mentioned in Micronesia, including Palau, FSM, and the Marshalls, all use U.S. currency. They're all part of the U.S. postal system. So they have their own zip code. They have their own postal abbreviations. So they're all tied very heavily to the U.S. They all signed compacts of free association when they became independent. And it was very evident in the Marshalls as I was walking. I saw a crew. It was a small unit of Army engineers, and they were building a basketball court and fixing up a school. Before I had got there, a Navy ship arrived, and they were doing free physicals and other health things for people on the island. When you read the newspaper, the biggest stories are about getting U.S. aid for this and that, some scandal that involved trying to hire lobbyists to get more aid. Everything is basically set up around getting aid from the United States.
What is the natural economy other than that?
None.
Fishing? None.
To be honest, the Marshalls, every square inch of the country is coral atoll, which means there's no minerals, there's no forest, there's no agriculture really, other than some taro patches and coconut. They don't have a fishing fleet, so they sell their fishing rights, usually for a song, to places like Japan or Taiwan. There's no tourism because, like I said, you have Hawaii on one end and Guam on the other, so very few people go between. So there's an army base on the island of Kwajalein, and between that and USAID, that's pretty much the economy. A lot of the people in the Marshalls have moved either to Guam or to Honolulu and some to California. Part of the Compact of Free Association means that they can come to the U.S. freely. They don't need a green card to work. So a lot of people have been doing that. And I've read that the population of the Marshalls is about 60,000. But the people there told me it's probably closer to 45,000 now.
Interesting.
Palau, however, is a very developed place, very strong tourism industry. They are very, very concerned about protecting the reefs because they realize that's where their money's from.
Sure.
They've shot two episodes of Survivor there. It's a really very nice place to visit.
Okay. Who should go to Micronesia is someone who likes to dive, snorkel, swim, or lie on a beach.
People always talk about these hidden treasures that no one's found.
Right.
Micronesia is that, without question. Especially Panape, Kosarai, Chuuk, and Yap, the Federated States of Micronesia.
Okay.
Simply because it's hard to get to, and it's never going to get easier to get to. It's affordable. I stayed in Panape at what I think is probably one of the nicer hotels on the island. Everything was made out of wood, natural materials, natural construction techniques. Wonderful place, overlooking the lagoon, beautiful scenery, fresh papaya for breakfast every day, all well under $100 a day.
Okay.
And you go to some place like Tahiti, you're going to end up spending hundreds of dollars a day just for a room. And I think you're going to get an experience which is probably much nicer. And like I said, there are no big resorts. If you want really kind of an authentic trip, that's the place you want to go. You have to work to get there, but I think it's well worth the trip. Because there's only one way to get there, and that's that, like I said, the flight that goes from Hawaii to Guam.
Uh-huh.
And the flight does the same routine every time. It goes from Honolulu, Majuro, Kwajalein, Kosarai, Panape, Chuuk, Guam. And then going back, it does the exact same thing. So if you were to go to Guam or Micronesia, you could easily stop at most of those places for 2 days just to kind of get the experience for it and say you've been there. And to be honest, you could probably get your fill of Majuro in that time period. There isn't a whole lot to see.
Okay. Was it a good start to your trip?
I actually did it kind of more towards the middle of my trip. I did the South Pacific first, and then I came back up to Hawaii. And the reason was is that there's no way to get to the south, to the north part of the Pacific very easily. It's very difficult to find flights that link those areas up. I was literally, in one day, I ended up traveling. I was in five countries. I went from the Solomon Islands to Nauru to Kiribati. I was denied entry into the country because my visa got wet and they couldn't read it. So they put me on a flight to Fiji, And then from there, I was going to go to Tuvalu, but I decided to skip that, and I just went to Hawaii. So I was in, within a 30-hour period, I was in within five countries and went a good chunk of the globe, all so I could just get up to Micronesia.
And you talked about flying. That is the way you were getting around. You weren't taking a boat any place in Micronesia.
Other than going to the outer islands, that is pretty much the only way you can do it.
Okay.
And the problem is it's very expensive. Continental Micronesia, which is the Continental subsidiary which does that route, pretty much has a monopoly on flights. So I know there's a Marshall Islands airline that which consists of one puddle jumper that they own, and that makes a regular flight. I shouldn't say regular. It goes to Bikini and a couple other of the atolls that do stops. I don't think FSM has anything. There are boats, very slow boats that do supplies
freighters.
To the outer islands. I had the opportunity to take that, but I didn't do it because my flight schedule was pretty much set in stone for the next 30 days, so I couldn't do it. But it is possible.
Okay. The best day in Micronesia that you had?
Oh, that was easily the day I went to Nan Madao.
Okay.
Or that would also one of the days maybe I went diving in Palau. What happened is I had a guide. We went out in a boat in the lagoon. We went to various places. We picked out an uninhabited beach that had white sand. They packed me a bento lunch that was in a banana leaf. So I had that on the beach. Went back in the boat. We encountered a rainstorm, from which I got some excellent photos. Went to Nan Madao, went to a couple of very beautiful waterfalls on the island, and then went back. It was a really great day. And in Palau, in addition to some excellent diving, and it's a very popular dive spot, I think several times we went diving and actually ran into another group while we were diving. You could see lots of sharks, reef sharks, manta rays. I saw several manta rays. They had places where you could go for shark feeding. I think they've stopped doing that now, in addition to the jellyfish lake. So it's really one of the best dive sites. And if you're not into diving, there's still plenty to do just with snorkeling in Palau.
Okay. The most memorable person you met?
The most memorable person I met... That would probably be, it would probably have to be the American expats. There was one that ran a hotel in Panape and a couple that ran a hotel in Koh Sarai. The couple in Panape had been living there for 30 years, ever since it was the Caroline Islands. Their son was born there. He's an American, but he speaks fluent Panape. And it was very interesting. They have people that work at the hotel, and he's able to speak in Panape with them. And they have been there living in paradise for 3 decades now, and it was just very interesting to talk with these people, how they've seen everything happen to this island, and the world just kind of keeps passing the country by. Literally, there was, and when I was talking to them, they didn't know what was going to happen because the Marshalls were initially going to be part of this grand Micronesia. But all the different countries just began splitting off. Palau didn't want to have anything to do with them because they felt they were ethnically different enough. Huh. Northern Mariana said, no, we're going to become a U.S. territory. And then it was the Carolines and the Marshalls that were left over. And the Marshalls said, no, we don't want you diluting the funding we're getting from the U.S. government. So they became their own country. And the Federated States of Micronesia are what's left over. And just hearing him tell the story of what's happened over the decades was really kind of interesting.
Anything else that people should know as we wrap this up? One thing you'd want people to know if they were going to go to this part of the world?
Don't expect a 5-star experience. If you go to Guam, Guam is just like going to the United States. There's absolutely no difference. I mean, literally, even the native Chamorro people that were there, I overheard a bunch of kids talking at McDonald's. They spoke with an American accent. We have every fast food. It's just a giant military base with certain parts that are devoted to Japanese tourists. That's Guam.
Okay.
But when you go, actually, you know what? I just thought of something. The most interesting person I met was actually a retired American engineer I met in the Marshall Islands. There was an American sports bar attached to the place I was staying. The internet on the Marshall Islands is horrible. The only time I was ever able to get internet, I had to literally walk over to the central communications building where they have the big satellite dishes, and I had to use a computer there. And while I was there, I looked at their rates, and it cost, I think, $5,000 a month for a DSL line in the Marshalls. And that's just for the connection. That's just for the line, not for the bandwidth, which was an extra $800 a month.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm at my computer writing an article for my website, and there are several of these Western guys at a table, And I later found out this is kind of the expatriate club. They would come and have breakfast in the morning and talk. And eventually they walked over and they said, "What are you doing here?" because nobody ever comes to visit the Marshalls. And I got to know these guys pretty well the next couple of days. And a lot of them just had amazing stories to tell. One guy had a Marshallese wife and had been everywhere. He had been on a boat, merchant marines. You know, I was showing him on Google Earth where I was going. And he said, "Oh, I've been there, all these just out of the way places." This one guy was an engineer and he basically sold all his stuff and was looking for a place. He just wanted to get away from it, like far away. And he was going to go to Samoa, but he ended up coming to the Marshalls. And he doesn't live in Majuro. He lives in one of the outer atoll islands where there's like nobody there. He has a solar panel. He has a small hut that got built and that's it. Huh. And he was in Majuro. He had to, like, you know, take care of some business and contact some people. And he also had a Marshallese wife, and I think they had to fly to Manila. But yeah, I mean, there were a lot of people that had come here and to get away from the world, and that's about as far away as you can get, at least culturally.
Hmm. Well, Gary, tell us one more time where we can find your stories that you've been writing about your travels.
Everything-everywhere.com.
Well, Gary, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about a fascinating and remote part of the world.
All right. Thank you very much.
I have one internet resource for you today, and that is a site called airlinemeals.net. If you are flying in a flight that has more than just peanuts, or if you're a fan of airline food, that seems like that would be hard to believe. Check out the link in the show notes to airlinemeals.net or to an article about airlinemeals.net and all the things you can learn about where the food on airlines actually is even appetizing looking. So check out that link. You may recall that the guest on last week's show was David Brody from the Travel in 10 podcast. Just immediately after we stopped me interviewing him, he interviewed me, and I'm on his latest episode talking about Istanbul. So you want to check that out. I'll put a link to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I've received a number of emails so far, or comments, from people who heard me mention on the show on voluntourism that I'd gotten an email from Elizabeth, who is a VIP tour guide at Walt Disney World. And frankly, I was in trouble because I didn't invite her immediately on the show. So I have corrected my behavior, and we have invited Elizabeth to be on the show. We're still working out the details. Just so you know, I try and put up on the discussion board, there's a place to ask questions of our guests. So if you're interested in asking a question about Walt Disney World or any other scheduled guest, check out that section of the discussion board, amateurtraveler.com/board. And you'll get a chance to put your questions in, and I'll just replace one of my questions with one of yours if you've got a good question for a guest. I would remind you to go to Trepanator.com and check out the video for Swimming with Jellyfish that should accompany this particular episode. And don't forget while you're there that if you subscribe via email to Trepanator.com, which is my travel blog, then I'll enter you in a contest to win a poster, which I'll be awarding at the end of March. Speaking of videos, I do have a new episode for the Amateur Traveler Video Edition, which is a series of 5-minute videos that releases every other week, also on amateurtraveler.com. Two things about this video. One is this is the first video that will be offered in a higher definition version suitable for playing on the Apple TV. And then the second thing is, if you're easily offended, I would suggest you skip this video. It is shot in France, it is shot at the beach, and there is a brief portion of it that is not entirely work safe. So with that warning, I think we'll wrap up this show. If you're interested in getting a hold of me, send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. Leave a comment on the website, go to the discussion boards again, or leave a message on the comment line. You can also follow me on Twitter. There are many different ways to connect with me, and you can find out all of those at amateurtraveler.com/contact. And again, for those of you who may not be watching this show is also available in an iTunes enhanced version illustrated with pictures. As always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be